At this time, it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Carol M. with 42 years from Fresno.
Hi, everybody. My name's Carol, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 1st, 1971. I'm old. Very old. Let's see. I was born in Fresno, got drunk at 16 in Fresno, got sober at 35 in Fresno, still live in Fresno. But I get to play. I am your garden variety drunk. I was a blackout drinker from the get-go. I went to a slumber party when I was 16 years old, and a friend and their folks sat in the back room and let us do whatever we wanted to do. And I understand that I drank a lot, and I ended up sitting in the corner grinning all night long. That's probably the last time I grinned. I was a bar drinker. When I was drinking, at 17, I started going to bars in Fresno, and they didn't check your ID. I looked older than I was, so I got away with a lot of crap. When I was 21, I celebrated my 21st birthday at the Hacienda, and they almost stroked out. I loved drinking. At the beginning, it made me feel like I was 5'2", blonde, petite, instead of a cross-eyed, knock-kneed, pigeon-toed, whatever. I think I was born an alcoholic. I don't know that that's whether I can prove that or not, but I know that. And when I went to kindergarten, I needed a drink really bad, and I didn't get it, so I had to tough it out for the next 11 years. I liked drinking in the beginning. It was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. Partying. In those days, like I say, when you got stopped by the cops and you were drunk or whatever, they patted you on the head and said, "Go home, honey," or they followed you home. I'm so grateful. Well, maybe I'd have gotten here sooner. I don't know if I'd have been busted a few times, but I don't think I'd have done well in prison. I just don't think I'd have done well. With my mouth, they would have probably cut my throat in about a week and a half, maybe. But I got here. Well, I got to, when I was 21 years old, I was in an automobile accident, and I got some insurance money, and I got kind of beat up. And actually, it was funny, because I was sober, and I got hit by a drunk driver, which ought to said, something should have said, "I'm doing so good here." But it didn't occur to me that I had a problem with alcohol. My sister and I got some money from the insurance company, and we took a header over to Europe, and I drank my way through Europe for about a year. Ended up in Spain in 1959, and I got so drunk there. In that time, you used to take your bottle, empty bottle, to the wine shop in Spain and have it filled up, and then you take it home. None of this hermetically sealed crap that you know you were going to die from some kind of a germ. The booze kills anything anyway. But one of our friends had a wine store, and we went into the wine store for the evening when it was closed, and we drank out of every barrel and every bottle and every place, and I puked for 3 days. Just awful. We lived in a place called the Villa Matilda, and it had posts on the outside, in the middle, and in the inside, and I hit them all. I don't think I've ever been that drunk again. I'm going to put this down because it's going to drive me crazy. And that's not a drive, it's a shortcut. Anyway, I threw up for 3 days, and I think my body was telling me, "Girl, this stuff is poison. Let it go. Don't do it anymore. You're going to die." And I said, "Yeah, right." So from that time on, I never threw up. I had hangovers a little bit, but not really. I think my body just said, "You're trying to kill yourself, and I'm going to let you." And I commenced to drink. This is one of those, I have to tell this story because everybody who has heard it says I have to tell it. Because when I was in Spain at a place called the Playa San Juan. I was out there. I thought I was pregnant. You know how that goes. In 1959, pregnant, single, not a good idea. So I thought, I'm going to kill myself. And I started, I'm a good swimmer, by the way. And I started walking out into the ocean, or the Mediterranean, actually, it was. And I started walking. I was going to be like, you guys probably don't know who Joan Crawford was, but she was always walking out in the ocean in a Gola May dress and just killing herself. Well, that's what I was going to do, except I was in a swimming suit. And I walked, and I walked, and I walked. And the water came up to here, and it went down to there. And up to here, and down to there. And I finally turned around and I said, fuck, I'm going to have to walk out awfully long way back there. And so I turned around, and I wasn't pregnant, and I didn't die, and I'm, you know, I was a drama queen for about 30 minutes, and then I never tried to kill myself again. I thought, this is just way too much of a waste of time. Let's just do it. And I came back home, and I drank in all the lovely bars, like, there are none of them there anymore. Johnny's, the Desert Inn, Town and Country, God, D-Marquee, gay bars, straight bars, who knew? But you drank. You went, you drank. And I was telling my friend Smart Mouth about the fact that I was a blackout drinker always, so, and I think I was a slut. And he asked me, what did I do? And I explained some of the things. He said, you are a slut. So I don't have to say I think I was a slut anymore. You know, I had information, more information. That being said, I don't do that sort of thing anymore. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't screw. It's just really sad. But don't mess with my sugar. I'm telling you. Anyway, I kept on drinking, kept on being, getting a little bit more trouble each time. I was never legally labeled an alcoholic because I never got put in jail and I never went to a mental institution and all that stuff that a lot of people have today. I don't know whether it's a good thing or it's a bad thing, but I think I got here precisely when I was supposed to get here because my life was getting, I would work. I always had a job, you know, no more than 3 years, though. You can't work in a place more than 3 years because by the time 3 years comes up, they've caught on to all your bullshit. The fact that you don't show up on Mondays and by Tuesdays you're almost useful, and by Wednesday you can do your job, and Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then you run out and do it again. So I worked, but I didn't succeed much, and I just kept feeling crappier and crappier and crappier about myself. And I remember sitting in my bed, in my room, thinking, I said to God, well, I will tell you this prior. When I was 16, my folks made me go to church. I was a Pentecostal. I was laid hands on, preached over, spoken tongues on, danced about, and I'm still a drunk. So, you know, God apparently didn't want me to be cured that way. But then when I was 35, I sat on my bed and I said, God, I just can't do this anymore. Either you get me some help or let me die, and I'm not really given a whole lot about which way you go. And shortly thereafter, I went to another 12-step program because I weighed 325 pounds. And I was doing that, and you couldn't drink, which was making it difficult. And this AA speaker named Don H. came, and he was gorgeous. And I fell in lust in about 30 seconds. And I thought, and he started talking about blackouts, and No, I had never heard anybody else talk about blackouts because that's always what I did. I just thought it was part of drinking. And I listened to him, and there's something clicked. And I think I maybe I'm an alcoholic. I mean, don't rush it, but maybe. And I went to, my first meeting was at the Alano Club in Fresno. And I sat there, and I had a pack of cigarettes in my hand, and I just destroyed it because I was so afraid of saying that I was an alcoholic. But they asked for people who were new, and I said that I was alcoholic. And they all said, hi, like, what? Nobody said hi to me anymore. They weren't even asking me to go anywhere anymore. So, and one of the sweetest men in the world came up to me, and he said, honey, you need to go someplace else. This is not a good place. He must have looked at me and thought, slut material. Maybe I better get her out of here. But he said, go over to the village group. You'll do better over there. I didn't know what that was, but I did go. And I met my sponsor there, Annette, who they called Granny Grunch. And, oh, gosh, she had so many crappy names. Mother Superior, Dragon Lady. She just was lovely. But she had the wildest stories, and I loved her stories. And I think that kept me coming back more than the sobriety part. I swear to God, I do not think I heard them talk about God, because if I had, I might have panicked and left. But I think, like my friend Dottie used to say, most drunks have a built-in shit screen, and if we block out what we're not able to hear yet. And I'm grateful for that, because I didn't hear all the "you have to." They sneak up on you, you know, like, just keep coming back. And then keep coming back and don't drink. And keep coming back and go to meetings. And then get a sponsor. And then work the steps. And, you know, by the time you're hooked, what are you going to do? You're going to do what they tell you. I didn't know that you couldn't tell your sponsor to go stick it. I was so ready to do whatever they told me to do that I just did it. And I was about a year and a half sober, and somebody went out and got drunk, and I thought, I didn't think you could do that. I mean, I was dumb. For a 35-year-old woman, I was dumb. I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew nothing about steps or having to take responsibility for my behavior, because I believe I was ready, and I didn't know I was ready. I heard a gentleman say not too long ago that if you are not done, there is nothing we can do for you. But if you are done, you can hardly screw it up. It's just, because I've screwed up lots of things in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I haven't had to pick up the drink yet. I have one sobriety date for which I'm truly grateful, because I have short-term memory loss, and I probably, if I had more than one, I'd be screwed sideways. God gives me little bitty pluses in my life. I've never had the big boom like Bill W. did. I had the variety, the educational variety of getting sober and finding a higher power and working the steps on a daily basis. I believe 1, 2, and 3 is I can't, God can. I think I'll let him. 4th is writing down. It says moral inventory. Mine was not quite so moral, but it was the best I could do at the time. And telling another human being about it, everything that I could remember, was vital for me to find out who I am and what I am and what I'm capable of, good and bad. I am capable of the most heinous crime or the most spiritual thing. But somewhere in the middle is where I live most of the time. I did my 4th and 5th. 6th and 7th in early sobriety, it's not a two paragraphs, and you just kind of whip right through that. She told me my character defects, which I didn't think she was right, but I said, okay, fine. I thought some of the things that I thought were good qualities were character defects, and I had to be willing to set all that stuff aside, not just the ones I thought were good and bad or whatever. The program tells me that I have to be willing to turn my back on everything that I have believed in the past. And the program, I love it, there's one of the forewords that says, this is precisely what we had to do. I love the fact that there's not a lot of wiggle room for people like me. You give me an inch and I'll take 4 days. I just don't understand moderation. It's just not in my vocabulary. It's 1 good, 7 is better, and then a few more after that. So I have learned over the years to trust my sponsor. I've had 4 sponsors, my first one for 5 years, my second for 27, my third for about 4 years, and I have a new sponsor the last year who loves me, she knows me, and she doesn't let me get away with shit, for which I'm truly grateful, because, you know, we get enough sobriety, you think, well, you can't mess with me. Don't you know who I am? I'm sober forever. I was just at a conference over at Palm Springs this weekend, and I'm there 42 years, right? Big effing deal. I'm trying not to use that word so much. Fuck, I can't not use it. I'm sorry. I just, you know, not, just not me. But anyway, they had two ladies with 63 years sobriety. They had an old-timers meeting, where they call it a long-timers meeting, and they had about... They took everybody with 50-plus years that could get up and talk. And the rest of us put our cards in the bucket to say how long we had. And you could have had to have at least 30 years sobriety in order to speak. And I got my name pulled out, and I thought, oh, fuck. And then I get up there, and John says, I didn't say the word. And I said, well, I don't. You know how many people? 63 years, for God's sake? I'm not going to say fuck in front of them. They might throw me out of AA. I don't know. Can they do that? I don't know. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But I have learned over the years that I have an ability to fool myself when I want to. That's why I have to be responsible to somebody to tell them what the truth. I have been able to work, you know, about 4, 5, 6, 8, and 9 are the ones that get me out of all that crap that I had in the back. And 10, 11, and 12 help me clean up the wreckage of the present, because I get wreckage. I have been able to get a connection with my higher power that I started out with one about this big, and now it is so big that I don't understand it, but I don't have to. I just know it's there. I'm one of those weird, strange mental people. I ask for God. I pray to God. I give all information to God, and I expect him to do things, and then he does them, and I'm surprised every time. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons I have to keep coming back, because I have short-term memory loss. I don't remember what I did yesterday, let alone 10 years ago or 20 minutes from now. I don't know. I just do the next indicated thing that helps me stay comfortable in my own skin, because when I got in here, I had no self-esteem, no worth. I felt like gum on the bottom of somebody's shoes, and you people kept saying, keep coming back. And I'm going, if you only knew who I was and what I'm like, you would not say that. And when they found out, they still did. They still do. I am blessed with a fellowship that my home group is the Fresno Fellowship. I'm blessed to be there. I started out the Village Group, and then we started the Fresno Fellowship, and then I got pissed at them and went back to Basics, and I got pissed at them and went somewhere else. Now I'm back to Fresno Fellowship. It's all good. It's all alcoholics. We get to communicate with another drunk. I get to talk to another drunk. Another drunk gets to talk to me. I don't have to sit in my self-pity and no worth and bad attitude. I don't have to sit there if I don't want to. I have come to know that every time I am disturbed, I hate this. There's something wrong with me. I hate that. I used to think that, you know, if you'd shape up, I'd be okay. And if you shaped up, what would I do? I would have no place to go. I would have no one to blame. And today I have nobody to blame for the bad stuff except me. And all the good stuff God gets the credit for. I think it's a shitty deal, but there you have it. I'm stuck with it. I get to participate in my sobriety. I get to participate in a lot of ladies' sobrieties. Fresno Fellowship has like 28 meetings a week. Noon, 5:30, 7 o'clock, sometimes 8:30, and on the weekends, 9 o'clock in the morning. And so there's lots and lots and lots of card-carrying newcomers. And some of them stick. And I just love it when I see somebody coming in with their knuckles dragging. And a couple of months down the road, they start to smile a little, kind of high. I try so hard to remember their names, because it gives them a thrill. I always loved it when somebody remembered my name. I love the fact that I love to. I used to, don't do this so much anymore, but I used to pick on the newcomers. You remember when we used to pour coffee and they get a cup and you put it right up to the top? You know they're not going to pick it up. You know they're not, because they're. So, I mean, that was the early days of being mean-spirited. Now I don't do that. Now what I love to do is I go up and hug them, and they're stiffer on the board, and they think, and then you do it every day, or every time you see them, you hug them. And they just, and then one day you don't do it. Then they come up and say, are you mad at me? we all need to love one another. We all need to care for one another because we're people that were not socially acceptable in a lot of places for a lot of times. And today, most of the time, I'm socially acceptable. Not always, but you know, I go to church too, but I don't use the F word there, you know. They're not Pentecostals anymore. They're Assemblies of God, but still, I think they'd crap out if I talked like this. They just don't understand. They don't have to understand. They just have to love me like I love them. And I get calls every once in a while, so-and-so needs help. And I said, do they want to get sober? If they want to, send them my way. But I can't be responsible to go to them. Well, that's what the program tells me. If you want what we have, we'll give it to you in a heartbeat. But you have to want it. You have to ask for it. I can't beat you to death with it. In early sobriety, I did. God, I tried. I think I'm the first 5 years, everybody I sponsored went out and got drunk, and I said, I'm not doing it right. My sponsor says, no, you can't get anybody drunk, and you can't get anybody sober. You can make it a little tough for them to stay sober if you're a bitch, but I always said a bitch. My friend bought me a t-shirt in New Orleans a few years back, and I wear it every now and again because it says, I'm not a bitch, I'm the bitch, and it's Miss Bitch to you. And I said, like, bitch is a bad thing. You know, if you want sweet and lovely, go to somebody else. Because there are people that are sweet and loving and kind. I'm saying, if you don't want to work the steps, get away from me. I don't want to waste my time because I want to stay sober. And if you want what I have, you got to do what I do. If I want what you have, we got to do it together. I can't do it by myself. I have no ability to fix myself. None. My higher power has to be willing to show me a path, or my sponsor or whoever needs to show me a path that I need to go to undo something that is wrong or not working for me. I mean, if your life is working for you, great. But if it's not, maybe you ought to contrive what we do, which is the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard something this weekend, and I don't know whether I agree with her yet or not. They said something about the fact that alcoholism is a disease. Well, the AMA says that. One person, and I've heard it many, many times, we suffer from a spiritual malady. I don't know whether I have a disease or whether I don't have a disease, but I suffer from a spiritual malady, a physical allergy, and a mental obsession. I am 3 for 3. I have all of them. I didn't skip any of them. And so I have to do what you do. I have to be willing to ask my higher power on a daily basis, keep me sober another day. I don't plan on drinking. I don't plan on doing a lot of things. But if I stay in today and ask God to keep me in today, I don't have to drink today. I didn't drink yesterday. I don't know whether I'll drink tomorrow. But the likelihood of my drinking gets slimmer when I'm in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're more and more talking about putting the newcomers in the center and letting the old-timers around the edges so that the herd can protect you. That's what we do. Just because we're old doesn't mean we're dead or dumb or anything. I've got experience. I can share my story till the cows come home. You can share yours. I don't give a shit. I really don't. I want to know your experience. What did you do when this happened? How did you change it when this happened? Which direction did you go when that happened? And that's what I've learned over the years. If I do what the other people do, then I don't have to suffer my disease, if you will, or my whatever. I have to be willing to show up, suit up, shape up now and again, not always. I could say one of the joys of being old and an old timer is you get away with a whole lot of crap you probably wouldn't when I was new. You know, you had to be kind of sort of proper. What are they going to do? Shoot me? We don't shoot our wounded. We don't eat them. We may slap them around a little bit, but we don't try to hurt them. A few people in this room I've slapped around a tad. Right, Reyes? Uh-huh. Yeah. But the thing I love about this program is that I am most of the time okay in my own skin as a direct result of using the steps, of I know I'm an alcoholic. That's a given. I know that my life is unmanageable, whether I'm drunk or whether I'm sober. But when I recognize it as sobriety, that I can do the steps that I need to do the footwork that I need to do in order to have my life be managed by my higher power. If you don't have a higher power, I hope you find one. My booze was my higher power for 19 years, and it isn't anymore. My friend always says, I suffer from alcoholism, not alcoholism. Nothing is a wasm with me. It is always and will always be in my life. It will be a part of who I am. Most everybody I know knows I'm an alcoholic and that I'm in AA. I have friends that stay sober in another fashion, and that's fine with them, but I couldn't. I needed the discipline that I had not any of. I needed direction that I had no idea where to go. I needed a hand to hold my hand so that I would walk with you. And I was so grateful for all the people that were in my... I've lost so many people. We're trying to count all the people that we've lost in sobriety that died sober. And, you know, I am looking so forward to that AA meeting in the sky when I go. That's going to be a riot, because I'm going to see Annette and Dottie and Ray and Isaac and all those people pissing and moaning and all of them fighting for top dog because they're all egocentric, some bitches, just like the rest of us. And I bet that's going to be a kick in the head. They're going to have so many leaders and so few peons. Oh, well, that's all right. That's why I'm sticking around here. I keep telling my higher power, if you want me, okay, I'm ready. But if you don't care, I mean, it's not a big rush. I got a lot of things I want to do because I am sober, and I can do them because I am sober. Since I've gotten sober, I have been able to travel all over the world, go to meetings in all over different places. I got to go to Oradea, Romania, but on the way we stopped in Budapest, Hungary, and somebody knew I was going, and when I hit the hotel, there was a message for me that said that we will pick you up at 7:30 to take you to a meeting. I had no idea who they were. They picked me up, took me through the subway. We went to an AA meeting. It was in English, and it was wonderful. And afterwards, they had a business meeting, and they were fighting over something central office was doing. I thought, Jesus, it's like being at home. We're argumentative cement heads, and we want what we want when we want it our way. And the book says, nah, you don't get it that way if you want what we have. So I am fortunate that I get to be in service. I get to go to Pleasant Valley Prison once a month. My friend Marty always makes me go. Now, he moved out of town, but I still have to go. And I said, Marty, you know, I never went to prison. What am I going to do there? Just tell your experience. And a lot of those guys are lifers. I mean, they're in there forever and then some. Some of them may get out someday. One guy was 42 years in the joint, and he was maybe getting out. But they asked the most intelligent questions and things I had experience with. So I got to share my experience, strength, and hope, not my opinion. I have opinions like we all have. Opinions, assholes, we are all those. Not judging, just reporting. Yes, I am. Every time I say that, I know I'm judging up my gazingus, but that's all right. I know that if I do what they do, I can say I'm in H&I. I took over a women's meeting because I hate women's meetings. I became the secretary of the stupid-ass women's meeting. And it's fine. These are lovely ladies, and they're talking experience, strength, and hope. And I was thinking, first one and only women's meeting I went when I was early sobriety, they talked about their kids and their husbands. And I'm going, I don't have either. What am I doing here? It's like I went to one of the young people's meetings, and all they talked about was drugs. And I said, I didn't do drugs. When they were doing drugs in high school, if you got caught, you went to prison. You didn't just get a slap in the hand. You went to prison for 10 to 20 years. That's a long time for a joint. I'm saying, no, thank you. You get busted with drunk driving or whatever when you're underage. They just slap you on the hand and say, don't be doing that anymore. So it scared the wee out of me to do drugs, and I never did them. I did once went to a party sober, and everybody was smoking dope, and it was just in the air. And I got a contact high. And I went home and stared at the wall for 3 hours. And then I ate everything that was not red hot or nailed down. I said, I will weigh 500 pounds if I smoke that shit. Bad enough the way it was. So, we all get here however we get here, whether we're through the prison system, whether we're through just giving up, the court, whatever. Whatever got you here, count it as a blessing. Maybe that's the one thing you need to get you to stay here. I didn't come in that way. I just came in because I was a screw-up. And I heard somebody say this weekend that, you know, lots of times now they're saying, don't leave, instead of keep coming back. And she said, but what if I couldn't stay? So I keep saying, keep coming back. If you have to go back out and try it again, come back. Keep coming back till you get it, or you'll die. We die. There are so many people that never even get here, let alone the ones that come and go and come and go. And that's got to be very painful. It was bad enough staying sober, but having to go back out and come back, and of course, most of us don't like to admit that we might have done something inappropriate. So I think if I ever went out and drank, I'd have to stay sober 42 years before I could fess up that I went out and drank. You know, I don't know whether that's right or wrong. I don't want to drink. And as long as I stick with you people, and as long as I watch you do what you do, and I copy what you do, then I don't have to drink today. I can be the best Carol I've ever been. There's always room for improvement. I'm never going to have this nailed. I know that. I know that I get to go to meetings on a regular basis. I get to have a sponsor that loves me, cares about me, I trust, and I can give her anything and everything that I have within me. I have friends on this program who are, I love them to death. I cannot imagine life without you people in my life. I cannot imagine what my life would be like. Is it God calling?
Yes.
Oh, jeez. Don't be doing that. Oh, boy. When am I supposed to stop? I have time. Okay, I can revamp and find out where the head is. Huh?
Clock is in the box.
Oh. Okay, the clock is in the back. Okay, you guys get another few minutes of this bullshit. I'll tell you what, I have had such gifts given to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I said, I went to Romania, and my church went to build a orphanage house over there, which was kind of fun. My church actually let me go, and I had to clean up my act real big time there. All church people, you just don't behave the way I used to. Well, I do here, but anyway. We had a lot of fun there, and I got to know some really lovely people. And then I've been to London, and I've gone to meetings there, and in Paris, and Spain, and Greece, and Italy. And the only place I have never gotten to go that I wanted to go was Australia. And I booked a trip twice for a 30-day cruise, and twice they canceled it. I'm saying, God, you really don't want me to go to Australia, do you? I mean, maybe I was going to come back with a kangaroo or something. I have no idea. I might have been in love with a koala bear. It doesn't make any difference. It's just that I know that as long as I'm sober, I have a chance. As long as you're alive, you have a chance. No matter what's going on, there is no need or reason or excuse for me to pick up a drink. There is none. I have been through too many things and lost too many people and seen too many people lose husbands, wives, children, things that are horrible to happen to anybody. But they didn't have to drink. And I don't have to drink today. Of course, I would have drank over a broken shoelace. So, you know, I'm a wuss. I'm a weenie. I would use any excuse at all to drink in those days. And today I don't. If I get resentful or get a bad attitude or whatever, I do the writing. I write about it. The sponsor I had before this last one, she made me write love letters to people. You know what? A bunch of...
I did it. Only after I got to write that, you no good,
that's the fun letter, the second column, that's the fun letter, where you get to say what a jerk butt you are, and if you weren't doing this, I wouldn't have done that. And then I have to get down to the love letter that says, this is my part in this whole situation, and I don't put a butt on the end of it. The first amends I made, I did a yeah but at the end of it and had to go back and do it again. It's real. Because if I'm apologizing to you for my bad behavior and then I add but, it's a wash and you've got to start again. I had to anyway. I told another friend, don't say but, say however. I mean, I'm willing to look at anything to get around having to tell the truth and straighten up my act. I really would love to be getting away with all kinds of crap, but I know if I tried that, I would drink. And to drink for me is to die. I'm bad enough being sober and working the program. Can you imagine what it would be like me drunk like this for 42? I don't know. I wouldn't be alive because I was a driver. I always drove and drank. And I heard somebody say not too long ago, and I didn't even think about it, every time I got behind a wheel after drinking, I was willing to kill somebody, either you or me. And I thought, no. I was just driving and drinking. Yeah, but the truth, I am willing to kill somebody if I get behind a wheel drunk or on anything that's mind-altering that can screw up my, well, I was going to say my good driving, but Sam would say not so much. He says, I drive too fast. I'm one of those crazy people that have learned sign language so that I don't get shot because, and... and whatever. And this is asshole. And this is dumbass. Just in case you ever want to know. Yeah. Weird. I have no idea what the good words are, but it's like everything else in my life. I don't know what the good words are, but I know the rotten ones right up front. Every language I ever learned, I learned how to spell. I mean, I learned how to count to 10. Why, I don't know. And then learned all the dirty words. I took French for 4 years, and I knew all the dirty words. I got in Spain in about 30 seconds. I was living in a place called Alicante, and the dialect was Valenciano. And the first thing they said was something like, "Tens fuck." I said, oh, I like that. You know what it was? Do you have a light? I said, really? I'm going to use that one, and it's legal. I don't know what that has to do with anything except that I'm a nutty, crazy old lady that doesn't drink and has fun. I just don't think I want to live life if I can't have fun. If I can't poke fun at me and you, ain't no fun. I mean, these people that have got a stick up their ass, you think, geez, that's got to be painful to, be that stiff. So needless to say, I steer kind of clear of those people. I have one friend she's not in the program, and she is a worrier and the most negative lady I know. And I love her dearly. We were in the same Poverello Guild. We did fundraisers for the Poverello House. And she loves me, and she just thinks I'm the greatest thing since white bread. And she takes me to lunch once a week so that I can give her grief. Because she's whining and sniveling about this, and I'm saying, do you trust God? Well, yes. And do you love God? Yes. Then why don't you just give this stuff to me? Well, yeah, but. And I'm going. So for $5 a week, I give her cheap therapy through AA. And she knows it. She knows what I'm doing. But she still, I think she says, one of these days, I said, why don't you go to AA and take a drink and say you want to stop drinking? She said, but I don't want to stop drinking. I want to have my wine once in a while.
I said, that's not the point. Maybe you'd get in the program and you'd get to learn positive things. Well, I guess you can't make an alcoholic out of it. I have no idea what normal is. You know, I said, normal. What is normal? 98.6. And you know, my temperature is 97 point something. It's not quite normal. I knew that. I knew that all along. I give blood every 8 weeks. And they take my blood pressure and they look. And, well, I weighed 300 pounds. They take my blood pressure twice just to make sure that it wasn't wrong. Because you're supposed to have high blood pressure, high cholesterol, all that stuff. Don't have it. So, needless to say, I do enjoy my life. I enjoy my sobriety. I love alcoholics. I have, in the Fresno Fellowship, I squeeze fannies. Because I'm old, I get away with it. Even the wives don't care. And everybody else, they'll say, do I have test buns or not? You know, this is perverse shit. But that makes them laugh. It makes me laugh. I love it. And some of them have nice tight buns. I don't know what I'd do with it if I ever got anywhere. I went to the Bahamas in February because they had a sober vacation thing there, and they had a 7 o'clock in the morning meeting, and they just talked around, and they called on me, and I said, I think it was in 1981, I went on a sober sailor's cruise, and a bunch of us went, and we were all planning on getting laid. Didn't happen. And I said, and here it is, a whole bunch of years later, I'm coming in here and I'm still not getting laid. And this young kid says, well, I'll help you out. Can't do that. I have double digit sobriety, double digit without a cigarette, and double digit without getting laid. And I just would throw my whole record off, so I can't do that. I don't know what that has to do with Alcoholics Anonymous, except that I get to have fun, and I get to play, and I get to be around people that laugh and can not take themselves so seriously. I think that's one of the joyous things about sobriety is I don't take myself so seriously. If you like me, fine. If you don't, oh well. I used to work my ass off to make you love me. I would work my butt off to have somebody love me that I didn't even like. I didn't want to be around, but you had to love me, right? I got here and you say, no, you don't. You don't have to love me. Well, maybe you have to love me. I'm not sure about that. They say you have to love everybody. Some are a little harder than others. I know. I'm not pointing fingers, but... But anyway, today I am happy, joyous, and free. And I thank you so much for letting me come.